Hi, everybody. This is Keith, Music Man Hanilek, and this is the Final on Vinyl podcast. And tonight we are with Michael Whalen, and he's going to be releasing our April Tigers on April 21st this year. And I've had the pleasure to hear that great music. And this is our second interview with Michael. When I first started this podcast, he was one of my first people that came on board. And welcome, Michael.
Hey, Keith. It's great to be back, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, likewise, I love the opportunity to be able to talk to artists, and particularly somebody like yourself that's so influential and been making music for so long. Everybody knows who you are. You know, you've won Emmys. You've consulted with people. You support artists. You send me artists. I mean, what is it you don't do? I don't know. It's just amazing how much ground
you cover. I don't model. I don't think anybody wants to see me like that. You know, like no bathing suits, you know, like no evening wear. So I don't do that.
Okay.
No, sorry. You were asking a rhetorical question. I'm sorry. Okay. Because you said, what is it that you don't do? And I answered the question. So my bad.
I'm glad you have a sense of humor. So the first thing on my mind.
After 30 years in the music business, it's hard to have a sense of humor, but I'm trying. I'm struggling through, so it's all good.
Well, I think you do. And when I saw the name of this album, I'm like, I wonder how he came up with that one. Well, he's releasing it in April, but is there anything else that is attached to that?
Well, it's interesting. The album title was actually generated by a computer.
Okay.
And for the last couple of years, I've been really kind of embroiled in this whole conversation about algorithms and artificial intelligence. And one of the things that I just finished writing a blog about how musicians can coexist with artificial intelligence, because everyone's like, oh, it's going to come and it's going to replace everything. And I'm like, I don't think so. I think what it's going to do is I think it's going to raise the bar for performers and for writers, but I don't think it's going to replace us because we're human and they're not. So right. if we can remember that we're human and that they're not, I think we're going to be okay. But I've been really interested in the whole idea of algorithmic composition. There was a guy back in the early 80s, this guy, David Cope in MIT, who was writing and talking about algorithmic composition, and I've been into it for 40 years. And so so I was sort of playing around with, you know, sort of ideas for this record, because this record is very different, especially from the last couple that I've done, and a big, big left turn from, like, if you look at my whole catalog, this is a big left turn, this record. And so I wanted to think about, you know, I didn't want to like have like one of these sort of like normal sort of Michael sort of weird kind of emotional titles. I wanted to do something different. So I went to this algorithm and I put in a bunch of stuff, and this is what popped out. And I'm like, I like that. It's weird. It's a little strange. It doesn't describe the music at all, which I want people to come to this like not knowing at all what they're going to listen to. And because I think one of the things that's I'm very excited about is this idea that genre and style is if it's not already gone, it's disappearing. And so the idea that you could walk into this and not be thinking, oh, well, it's a fusion thing, it's a jazz thing, it's a global thing, it's a new age thing. If you can push all that aside and say, hey, you know, I'm just going to like experience some instrumental music and it's going to take me wherever it takes me, I think that's a great place to start.
Absolutely. I love it. I love going into listening, not knowing what to expect from track to track. And that's exactly what that album was like. And I totally agree. Total big left turn for you. And, you know, what was the driving force behind that change? You know, I know you said you have been, you know, studying AI and all these things, these technical things for 40 some odd years. But what's the first thing that came into your mind? Like, hey, you know what? It's about time I really changed it up and tried something different. When did that happen?
I think the pandemic was big, because I think, you know, I really wanted to collaborate with people, and I wanted to get in the same room with people and say, hey, let's collaborate. And the funny thing, of course, is that the people that I got for this record are so busy that even in the best of cases, I couldn't get them all in the same room. So I was like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. I am going to start 7 songs. I'm going to put down a very small, very kind of like a sketch of like the framework to a song. And then I'm going to hand it off to somebody, and they're going to hand it back to me, and then I'm going to hand it off to somebody else, and they're going to hand it off back to me. And so I started it, and then I sent it to Michael Brook, the guitarist, and he sent me back all of his parts. They were unbelievable. And it, like, changed, like, a lot of the pieces, and, the, like, the structure changed a bunch. And then I, like, did a little bit of work on that, and then I sent it to India, and Karsh Kali did the percussion, and he did a whole bunch of things with samples and all kinds of stuff. And then he sent me his stuff back. And then I was like, okay. And then I sent it to San Francisco to Michael Manring, and he did all the basses. And, you know, Keith, there are tracks on this album that have 7 bass parts. So like, he's doing all of this harmony stuff, and he's doing like this chordal stuff. And it's just the bass on this record is just like, it's like next level. And if you're a bass player and you listen to it, you're going to be like, oh my God. I mean, I've wanted to work with Michael Manring since I heard his Windham Hill record, Unusual Weather, in 1987. Like, he is a brilliant musician. He's a really terrific composer. But his fluidity on the bass and making it into a bass instrument and doing all the normal bassy stuff, but a melodic instrument, and how he brings edge into things, and like, and how he, you know, uses it as like a harmony instrument and chordal stuff. I mean, he's a brilliant musician. So he sent me his bass parts back, and I was like, okay, wow. And then I sent the tracks to Jeff Oster, who at that point was in Mexico. So then he went to New Hampshire, and he did all the trumpet parts with Tom Eaton at his studio in New Hampshire. And then they sent me all the stuff back. And then, you know, mixing the record was actually relatively easy. I got to say, it wasn't like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I mean, because by that point I had already gone through all the parts. I had already done a bunch of selects and whatever. And so it was just going through Jeff's stuff, which was amazing. And you know, and all of a sudden it was a record. But you know, what the agreement that I had made with the guys is all 5 of us are co-writing this, all 5 of us are co-arranging this, and you know, I'm gonna sort of ostensibly produce this, and I'm gonna mix this, but like, we are all equal contributors to this. And so the idea was, yes, these are all great players and they can all play great, but the thing that's great about the 4 guys that I have on this record is they're great composers. So these are people who are like thinking about composition, and they're thinking about development, and they're thinking about how to move something forward from the A to B. It's not like, let's go play a lot of notes. It's literally like, how can I add to the structure of this piece such that it's going to open up, or it's going to get a little broader, or do something that's interesting, or to play a counter against something else, something else that's going on. And the choices that the guys made were just wonderful. I mean, this literally worked out better than I could have ever possibly imagined.
Well, it's like magic coming in from all the corners of the globe, you know? You must have been, like, so excited with all this. Yeah. And it's so cool to do it that way. And Michael's bass, I totally agree. It's like, as soon as you hear it, that's Michael. He's amazing.
It's just, it's interesting. Like, inside the music business, inside like the new age sort of ambient sort of new music thing, he is super well respected, and then he's not very well known kind of outside of that. It's like, Michael what and I'm like, I'm sorry, like, I mean, he's up there with like Jaco, he's up there with Percy Jones, he's up there with like major guys, you know, as somebody who can really play, who can really arrange, who can really write. And, you know, and he's a guy who can, like, go into any ensemble and, like, just take it to, a whole other place. And so having Michael on this was really interesting, especially with a guitarist like Michael Brook, who is also a brilliant composer. And Michael Brook is not a guy who's going to be doing, like, you know, 12-minute searing solos on the guitar. Michael's doing, like, track after track of, like, these beautiful textural harmony parts and like these little rhythm things, these little syncopated things. And so between the guitar and the bass, how they played off each other is just, it's literally unbelievable. It's like, you know, it's so cool. And then I made a rule for myself. I made a little kind of unbreakable rule. One was I'm only going to play electric piano and one synthesizer on every song. So like if you listen to like Imaginary Trains or like Sacred Spaces or any of the stuff that I've done recently, like there's a track on Imaginary Trains that has 80 tracks of synthesizers. So for me to say, hey, you know, we're really, really going to strip this one down and we're going to be really, really spare here. That was like the most radical thing that I could do. So like I'm playing like a Wurlitzer on some things, I'm playing a Rhodes on some things. And then I have like a single synthesizer. And yes, I did a couple of parts, but it was like the same synthesizer. So like on one song, I'm playing a Mini Moog. On another song, I'm playing like my Prophet 5. On another song, I'm playing a Buchla. And it really, really made me think not so much about doing like a million textures. It was like, okay, musically, what's happening here? And like all of a sudden, I started having very different conversations than when I'm doing my stuff normally, which is like, you know, how many dozen, you know, synthesizer tracks are we going to do here? Like, you know, are we going to do 12 pad tracks or that kind of thing? And it was really cool because what was left was so much space. And there was like so much space for the guys to play in. And there was, I did a lot of stuff where like on the electric piano, I wasn't playing left hand. So there wasn't a lot of stuff happening in the bass. So that gave Michael a lot of space with the bass, and it gave Karsh a lot of space with percussion and like, you know, and different things that he could do. And so taking things out was a really kind of interesting kind of composition method, which I haven't really done ever. And it kind of blew my mind. It was like, okay, we're going to make really, really definite choices about notes. We're going to make a couple of basic sounds, and then we're just going to get the hell out of the way of the band. And it really worked out great.
That's great. It's like a puzzle coming together and so beautifully, you know, and then you have a beautiful portrait in front of you, a masterpiece. And you, with your array of keyboards, you're like Rick Wakeman. I see these pictures of you on Facebook. I'm like, oh, my God, your studio, and you're just totally surrounded with keyboards.
I mean, it's been really fun because, you know, for the last, I say, 4 or 5 years, I've gotten so deep again into hardware and the work that I did, like, on Sacred Spaces and the work that I did on Imaginary Trains. Like, I got in really deep with sound design, and it's been really fun. And I'm starting, I have sort of the first brushstrokes on a kind of major project where the entire room is going to be sort of set on fire for the next year. So just stand by for that. But I think doing this project completely stripped down was just what I needed between like sort of big sort of synth sound design things. It was like that Italian ice that you get in between courses at an Italian restaurant where like you get all the big flavors out of your mouth and you just get really specific and really small, and just getting back to the basic notes and just keeping it as small and spare as you could. That was fabulous. I mean, and the thing I said to the guys is I said, look, you can do anything to these tracks you want. You can cut them up. You can, you know, you can throw stuff out. You can, like, if you want to take out my parts and put in something else, you can do that. You go crazy. And what was really interesting was with the basic tracks that I sent, they were like, no, this is all really cool. But no, this is great because you gave us so much space. And what was interesting was as soon as I got their parts back, I'm taking out my own stuff. So it was like, yeah, we don't need that. And we don't need this, and we don't need that. So it's funny, like, there's a couple of tracks where people are like, well, I hear the guitar and the bass. I don't hear the keyboards. I'm like, it's there. It's just not a lot. And then there's other songs where, you know, it is a little, like, you know, synth forward, but it's a single track. There's this song "Morning Bell" where like I'm hitting this pad pretty hard, but it's a single synthesizer, and it's like, and it's played completely live, and it's not quantized, and it's like, it's just sort of like up against the track, and so it has like a real like organic performance thing to it, and the band kind of found a pocket. And you know, Karsh did such a great job with the percussion because he uses a combination of electronic percussion, loops, and acoustic percussion. Like, he is a great tabla player. So he lives in India, comes to the United States, he comes to Brooklyn all the time. But boy, he is just a massive, massive musician, and he made really cool choices about what was going to be electronic, what was going to be acoustic, and like how it comes together on these tracks is really, really cool. So the rhythm tracks are terrific. There's one of the songs where he distorted the tabla, and it's panning back and forth between the left and the right, and back and forth. And at first he was like, you know, does that work? And I'm like, yeah, I love it. I'm actually changing the entire track so we can actually enhance that more. Cause I loved how it felt, because not only was he kind of like doing something really cool with the groove, but the back and forth between the left and the right in the stereo field gave the whole track kind of a really unique feel to it. Like, you're in the room and you can kind of hear the guy doing the thing. It was really, really cool. There was a moment where we were talking about doing like possibly like an Atmos mix of this, and I was like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know. A lot of people who have heard it have said, hey, are you going to do a vinyl version of this? Or are you going to, you know, and I'm like, okay, let's just see how this all gets received. And, you know, we can have that conversation,
do the vinyl, please.
I know your strong preference, my friend. I know. But you know, the thing that's weird is that now that the pandemic is, you know, lightening up and, you know, things are beginning to move, and, you know, it's still really hard to get vinyl made. Like, I check in with it all the time, and even best case, it's like 6 to 9 months to get quality vinyl. Like, I can get crappy cheapo vinyl made in, you know, 8 weeks, but if I want to get like a nice pressing done, it's 6 to 9 months. And so if you want to have one of the good places do it, it's a while. And yes, there are companies that are investing in more machines, and yes, there's more capacity, and there's more stuff coming online, because I think there was a fear at the beginning of this that like the vinyl thing was going to happen and then it was going to like sort of like fade away. But I think we're at a point now where, you know, the vinyl thing has kind of taken hold, and I don't think it's going away. I don't think it's a fad anymore. So I'm hoping that in the next few months, people respond to the record, they like it, and then, you know, we can put together something, and then like maybe by the end of the summer, we can have a vinyl release of it done.
That'd be great. You know, you can get 500 copies made. You know, do pre-order, get different colors and all of that. Everybody's doing that and just selling out in no time. It really works.
Yeah. So I'm definitely looking at that. But the thing that was really cool about this record was how these guys were thinking not just about the composition and not just about the arrangement, but they were also like, because of how they played the parts, they were making very, very, very strong suggestions about the mixes and very strong suggestions about what was going to happen. And I was like, cool, great, let's go there. Let's make it happen. I mean, Karsh is, he's a great musician and great composer, but he is one of the best remixers I've ever heard. And I don't know if you saw, but he's been working with U2. U2 is putting out like sort of new versions of a lot of their hit songs, and he worked with them on two of their sort of newer versions of their songs, and he did these incredible new versions of these songs. And so, So it's like, it's a huge thing for him. He's going to, you know, he's getting a lot of attention for it. But like, I mean, I've known for a while that this guy's super talented, and he's so musical. He makes such good choices on things. And on this project, I mean, you know, a lot of it just sort of felt like sort of second nature to him. He was like, yeah, got this. Yeah, no problem. Okay, here we go. No problem. And it was really one of the things that I was a little bit worried about, because I had never worked with him like this before. I'd heard a lot of his music and a lot of things he had done, but when the tracks came back, I was just like, wow, this is like effortless for him. Like the tabla parts are so perfect and they're so locked in. And it is just the whole vibe, because everything. So, it was a sort of continual surprise and being sort of delighted continuously on this project.
Did you work with Ricky Kej?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Ricky actually worked with me. Yeah, he actually worked with me on Sacred Spaces. He, at first, I gave him one of the tracks to remix, and he sent me so much cool stuff that I actually used some of the parts on the album version of it, and then he became the featured artist on the song.
So, oh, okay. I didn't mean that. I meant the percussionist. I recognized his name. I thought he'd worked with Ricky, but that's great. He worked with you too, you know?
Oh, yeah. He worked with me. But yes, actually, they know each other very well. And Ricky always is asking me, like, you know, how's Karsh and what's happening? And he loves this record. He's like, wow, this is really, really cool what you guys did. So.
Oh, that's cool. Well, Michael, it's been great talking to you again, hearing your voice and everything you're talking about this music. You sound so excited about it. And I'm looking forward to getting the review and the interview out there after the 20th of this month. And I wish you the best. I hope it does well.
I thank you so much. I mean, the album comes out, full album comes out April 21st. I'm really excited about this record. I use Six Degrees as my distribution company, and they're already saying, hey, when are you doing the next one? And I'm like, whoa. So, I just finished paying for this one. So everybody calm down. And I'm really excited about where this can go, because I think it's opening up a lot of avenues. And the other thing that also could be cool is maybe if I do something like this again, maybe I put some different musicians on it. And we go in kind of a different direction. So I'm excited.
That's great. Well, thanks again for your time. And Michael Whalen, remember, folks, his new album, Our April Tigers, is out April 21st. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it, Keith.
You too. Take care.